And that's why many people are arguing that they're just criticizing Donald Trump, the way that he's handling the war in Ukraine. And I talked with Carl Wilkerson. He was so much upset with what is happening right now, the incapability of the administration in doing something substantial. Here is what General Flynn said, Scott, about what has happened in Russia.
Was happening for the billions and billions and billions of taxpayer dollars that we give to the United States intelligence community, particularly the CIA, and the billions of dollars that we've been given to tens of billions we've been given to Ukraine, for us to not know that this was ongoing, that this planning was ongoing, that this attack was going to occur against nuclear capable bombers. Okay, these aren't just some aircraft that are parked that are going to conduct close air support against, you know, frontier targets in the eastern part of the Donbasses of Ukraine. These are nuclear capable bombers. So for us to not know that, for us, our intelligence to not know that. So I don't believe for a second that our intelligence didn't know, not for a second. I do believe that our intelligence community and system and people in it didn't brief Donald Trump, which is really which is really, really dangerous. And it tells you, if the president of the United States is now saying, I don't know. I did not know about this. And he clearly didn't know about the assassination attempt that occurred last week. He said it during one of these hasty press conferences that were that came about during when he departed, I think, Marine One. I mean, he said, I'm not aware. I'm not aware. I mean, these are huge, huge issues. If I was Trump, if I was sitting in that situation room right now with the director of the CIA, you know, the director of national intelligence, the secretary of defense, and some of their, maybe the director of national security agency, some of the other key people, secretary of state, I would want to know, because I would find out. I would tell the FBI, I want an investigation going on right now as to who knew what and when did they know it about this particular attack. And I would tell Pam Bondi, I want a special counsel right now to determine exactly what occurred here. Why wasn't I brought up to speed on these kinds of issues? And I don't want it like 6 months or 4 years from now. I want it in the next week. Okay.
People are so much concerned, as you saw with General Flynn and Colonel Wilkerson, you as well.
Yeah, but let me just push back a little bit on General Flynn. I wish I could talk to him, because I'd say, you know, General Flynn, when you were in Iraq and you were doing the whole JSOC fusion thing with McChrystal, did you know everything the CIA was doing? It's a rhetorical question, General, because you didn't. Because you wore a uniform and you weren't in the little CIA bubble, the paramilitary bubble. There were things the CIA was doing in Iraq that you had no clue of. And to be honest, the director of the CIA had no clue of. You want to know why? You know this, General. I mean, this is what gets me about it, because this is very disingenuous. Once the CIA receives direction to do something, it's hands off. And until there's explicitly ordered to cease and desist, don't spend another dime, withdraw all personnel, drop everything. And even then, the CIA doesn't obey its orders, because once they get going, it becomes a sense. Read the founding instructions about CIA Special Activities Division. They called it something different back then, but back in 1947 or whenever the CIA was created. The Special Activities Staff was created for deniable covert operations to achieve regime change and all this. And it meant that they could lie to the U.S. government to achieve this, because it's deniable. Hey guys, when you create Frankenstein, why are you upset when Frankenstein does what Frankenstein does? The CIA should be disbanded, eliminated. And frankly speaking, nine-tenths of their case officers should be investigated and put in jail, because they're gangsters, they're criminals, and they can't be trusted. They're not good Americans. They're actually the worst kind of Americans, because they believe they operate above the law, that the Constitution has applied to them, because they've been given a mandate to lie, to cheat, to steal. Literally, that's what they do for a living. I remember, I mean, I was recruited by the CIA's paramilitary people. And, you know, the guy who talked to me, you know, Mick Flynn, that's not his name. It's one of the many aliases that he used, but he was a covert operator that went back, started out as a Green Beret in Vietnam, then switched over to SOG, got involved in the CIA's murder programs, and then went on and he was pushing Iran-Contra, and he was, you know, going into Honduras and setting up bases, working with the Contras. He did all that. He got involved in doing some other stupid stuff. And then in the lead up to the Gulf War, he set up the CIA special activities people did a program in Iraq before Desert Storm, where they had these Iraqi operatives in place in case an American pilot got shot down. And the operative's job was sort of to replicate what happened in World War II to create safe houses so these pilots could be brought in and then move from safe house to safe house, safe house, till the CIA could get them out. He set that program up and he monitored it from within Syria. After the war, he got involved in regime change operations in Iraq, initially lying to everybody, including me. But, you know, ultimately, everybody knew what they were up to. But he basically interviewed me, and the interview was going well until he said, you know, you're going to have to learn to lie. I said, well, I understand deniability. He said, no, you're going to have to learn to lie. Lie about everything, you know, everything into everybody. And he said, we don't think you can do that. And I said, I think you're right. I mean, you know, and that was sort of the end of that process. I mean, he didn't condemn me for it, but he's just like, you can't be a Boy Scout. You can't be, you know, an honest person here. You're getting into a game where everything's a lie. Everything is a lie. Everything. And I'm like, well, gosh, I don't know if I want to play that game anymore. But that's the CIA. That's the reality of it. These people were ordered. I just want to remind people, you're General Flynn and everybody's outraged, Larry Wilkerson's everybody outraged that they attacked nuclear bombers. You do know it's not the first time they did this. You know that CIA trained unconventional warfare teams penetrated Russia and made it to the outskirts of Ingalls base, where the nuclear bombers are, where all the bombers come before they bomb Ukraine. You know, when they put on, you know, the conventional stuff, and launched their attack against Ingalls Air Base, which again triggered the whole thing. That attack is one of the things that caused the Russians to change their doctrine, because that attack could only have taken place and did take place with the assistance of the CIA and the British. That's it. The President of the United States ordered that attack. Did Donald Trump rescind that order? No. The official policy of the United States under Biden was to achieve the strategic defeat of Russia. Has Donald Trump rescinded that order? No. So stop blaming the CIA. They're only doing what they're supposed to do. And they're going to lie about it. It's the president. He sucks. He's the worst leader in the world. And frankly speaking, it's the DNI. I mean, Tulsi Gabbard, I love her to death. I respect her. Why isn't she putting that in front of the president? Mr. President, you have to rescind this order, rescind this order, rescind. Call on the CIA director, Ratcliffe, and say, I need Russia House assembled before me right now with all their documents, and have Kash Patel put the FBI behind them with handcuffs ready. And I say, I want everything on the table. Every single operation you're doing with Ukraine in Russia, everything you're doing in Russia, on the table right now for review, because we're looking for consistency of policy. We have a president who says he wants to pursue peace, and you're in there blowing up goddamn airplanes. Stop. Do you not understand that what you're doing is undermining the president? They know damn well what they're doing is undermining the president, because they want to undermine the president, because they don't want peace with Russia. The CIA is a threat to the national security of the United States, because they do whatever the hell they want to do. But remember, at some point, they were ordered to do it. And they've been ordered to do things in Russia. Standing orders. I can guarantee you, if I walked into Moscow station and shut it down and opened up the safe and pulled, you'd see some weird stuff, man. You'd see some weird ass stuff and you'd be going, why are we doing this if we're pursuing peace? Because the CIA has standing orders to do this stuff. It's intelligence, man. Well, we've got to do things. No, we don't. We don't have to do things. The best intelligence, and I'll say this as somebody who did this for a long time, the best intelligence I've ever got is the intelligence I get by cooperating with people, by working together, because you get the accurate intelligence. When you have to go against a hostile target, you're coming in with the indirect approach. You very rarely get the whole picture. And because you've come in from different angles and using cutouts who are not necessarily the most honest people in the world, the information you receive is tainted. It may not be accurate. It could be fed back to you. I remember the Iraqi Amir Rashid, Minister of Oil, but he ran the WMD programs. At one point in time, mocked me because I was kicking his ass. I set up my own intelligence collection program, and I had Iraqi defectors that were giving me good information and going at it. And he said, okay, so you're pretty clever, Mr. Ritter, but, you know, what if just to bother you, set up my own counter, you know, intelligence program. And I set things up and I started feeding you information just to see how it gets to you and to see how you respond, so that when you come on your inspection team and you inspect this one site in a certain way, I go, aha, I own you now. I'm in your head. I'm directing your operations. And then he went and did it. Then he went and did it. And there was a period of time where we were carrying out inspections that were literally being directed by the Iraqi government, because they took control of the intelligence flow. And it was a bad period of time. I mean, in my defense, it happened after I left and before I came back. They seized control. Once I got back, I was able to purge that out and get back into where we were in control. But there was a period of time where the Iraqis actually took control of the flow of intelligence, and because they knew that we had exhausted all the other sources and we were desperate for information. And so they just started creating opportunities. Do you not think the Russians are doing that? Because again, this is stuff people have to understand. It's all relevant to this conversation. In the 1990s, the British and the Americans recruited everybody in Russia. Everybody. Because everybody in Russia wanted to be recruited. Hell, go take a look at all the KGB people that came over, wrote their memoirs, started, Matrokin brought in all his archives and all this stuff, and they're just sitting there spilling their guts on everybody but Vladimir Putin and a handful of the Siloviki who stayed there and said, no, we're true Russians to the core. But everybody was bought. Everybody was bought. And, you know, understand that we don't just buy the bit. We recruit. You remember Christopher Steele? You heard that name, right?
Yeah.
The dossier boy. He made his reputation just running around in the 1990s, recruiting everybody. Coffee boy. Hey, want to work for MI6? You know, shoeshine boy. Want to work for MI6? Prostitute. Hey, how about five of you work for us? Pimps, we'll take you. Everybody. And they just keep them on the books. And so the society is just totally, totally infiltrated with these resources. Now the Russians come in and they're not stupid. The Russians are very good. Yeah, you'll get away with something. You carry out an operation. The Russians arrest somebody, they reverse engineer it, do their money thing, da 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 da. And now they have a picture. They don't come out and say, this is everything we know. They go, huh, okay, just let this one run a little bit, monitor this guy, control this guy, start feeding this back in here. We have to arrest and try this guy because there has to be seen that we're doing something. But then what the Russians do is they reverse engineered that entire spider web. So the British and the Americans think they have all these resources inside, and the Russians have flipped them all and are controlling them all, and they're feeding the information back. That's why we suck. Because even the CIA, with all their secret super-duper crap, they're getting bad information. They don't know a damn. The biggest example of this, probably the most famous one that most Americans aren't aware of, do you remember when Barack Obama kicked out of Russian diplomats in 2016, right after the election. Said, oh, these are bad diplomats, and they did this and they did that, and they were doing, they're interfering and all this kind of stuff. You know how this happened? This happened because the FBI and the CIA tried to flip a Russian diplomat in the United States who had a drinking problem. Now, I just want everybody to understand what I just said. A Russian diplomat who had a drinking problem. Do you think the Russians would have a diplomat in the United States who had a drinking problem? You understand that the drinking problem is the big red flag, that they use that because that leads to marital difficulties, that leads to monetary problems. Read the book, Spy Who Came In From the Cold, and see how the British Smiley flips the main character so that he punches a grocer, gets drunk, goes to jail, gets his reputation ruined, just so that he looks like he's a prime candidate for recruitment and he goes in there. Meanwhile, he's a controlled resource the whole time. This guy was a controlled resource the whole time, and yet we recruited him. And then we kept him in place. At that time, the ambassador to the United States' name was Ushakov. You might know him, Yuri Ushakov. He's the senior foreign policy advisor to the president of Russia today. Well, Ushakov went back, and this guy followed him and got promoted in place with Ushakov. And he goes and he gets up, 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 up until now he's inside the presidential administration, the CIA's boy. Meanwhile, in the CIA, there's people like me going, nah, we ain't buying it. Hey, guys, we need to pull him out, do the polygraph. We need to stop feeding his reports in. This is bad juju. All the red flags are going up. We can't trust any of this stuff because it's too good to be true. But Brennan, director of the CIA at the time, no. Stop. We got a resource inside the presidential administration. So what Brennan did is when Russia House refused to run this guy because he's so obviously a double agent, Brennan took him into the executive and ran him himself. Brennan went and briefed the Gang of Eight. Brennan went and briefed the president, briefed him on all this stuff, got the United States to overreact, to go after Donald Trump, to accuse Donald Trump of things that Donald Trump didn't do. It was all made up. And the Russians are just sitting there going, what do you think Obama wants to hear today? Give it to him. What do you think? Do you think the Senate, what would happen if we gave him this information? Give it to him. And they're just feeding it. And they, oh no, they almost brought America down. You remember the summer of 2016, Donald Trump being accused of being a Russian guy, Hillary Clinton, the FBI line, the Russians are sitting back there going, ain't this beautiful? We didn't have to do anything. And America's just blowing itself up. That's because Brennan violated everything. And finally, what happened is this guy, here's the proof of it. They do all this stuff. Obama overreacts. And what do the Russians do? They retire him. Now, if he was really the CIA's boy, they'd have shot him. See, he was really a drunk. They didn't want to have this guy to begin with. He was not a good Foreign Service officer, but they kept him in, said, we'll keep you alive. We'll give you your pension. We'll give you all this stuff, but you have to work with us from now on, because if you don't, we'll kill you because you went and you drank the coffee with the CIA. And you weren't allowed to do that. You were a bad boy. So either die or play it. But the Russians are people of their word. They said, okay, you're free. Meanwhile, the Americans are like, we got to get him out of there. And so they did their extrication. The guy went on vacation with his wife, I think to Montenegro. Again, went on vacation with his wife. Doesn't happen. If you're some sort of top secret, high level dude, the Russians could care less about this. In family to Monte, then the CIA extricated him in a very difficult thing. Nobody was trying to stop him, but they got him out and everything's going hunky dory until he's now in the United States with his $1 million because he's been paid by the CIA the whole time to be this big level asset. Then he buys a house. But because the CIA knew this guy sucked, he bought it using his real name. And it showed up in the real estate records. And suddenly everybody knows who this guy is. And the whole thing fell apart. That's how bad the CIA is. Okay? That's how bad. The CIA sucks at everything it does with Russia. Go back and study the history of it. Their chief of station has been compromised the moment he sets foot in Russia. They try to do operations. They get nailed. The Russians have released the videotapes of these guys. They got one where some guy and his wife and are walking wearing the mask disguises, you know, like a Mission Impossible. And the mask disguise with the big bags and the big coats. And they walk in and the girl goes to the ladies' room. Why? Because it ain't a girl. Comes out, it's a guy. And he goes off and gets in a cab and goes, and the Russians track him with all the cameras around there, see who he reports, arrests that guy. He runs, tries to get back in him. I mean, the Russians have rolled up Moscow Station like you wouldn't believe. So Moscow Station's in there doing stupid stuff. The Russians know all about it. That's why the Russians are so calm, because they know everything. They know everything. But now we come back to Michael Flynn. Flynn, the CIA did this because the president told him to do it, but the president never told him to stop doing it. That's the problem. That's the problem. We have to shut the CIA down or more stuff is going to happen. And hopefully the president is given the wake-up call now. Hopefully the DNI works with Pam Bondi and Kash Patel to bring the CIA under control. Because if they don't, Nima, I'm here to tell you, this is a rogue agency that has the capability of ending all life on the planet. And believe me, they have some alcoholic wife-beating son of a bitches in there. They're case officers. These are the world's worst people, by the way. The life is horrible. I'm glad I didn't ever take that life. The life is horrible because you're not a good person. You look in the mirror and you realize what you've done. You're a liar. You're a murderer. You're a thief. You steal from your own government. You make agents that don't exist so you can take the money and pocket and put it in bank accounts so you can go out and have your whores and your alcohol. You're an alcoholic, and you hate yourself. You just despise yourself, and you keep doing these horrible things because you're a horrible human being. That's most of your case officers today. These aren't good people. They're not good people, and they can't reintegrate into society because they're alcoholics, because they're wife beaters, because they're criminals. I don't know what we do with them, but you know, it's not like give them a medal and let them come out and be good Americans. No, we put them into, you know, private contractors where they get to be alcoholics, wife beaters, and get their South American whores, and they go off and they do bad stuff until they die of either sclerosis, they get killed, or they just go off and shoot themselves because they suck as human beings. That's the CIA. That's the reality of the CIA's operations division. They should be shut down, 100% shut down. If you're going to do this kind of operation, give it to the military, because the military at least has some honor. The military has some discipline, some structure. And, you know, the military can do almost everything. I know I've gone off on here, but, you know, Desert One, the attempted rescue mission, the CIA had their things going on. You know, they lied to Beckwith. They lied to Delta Force. They lied to everybody about their sources. But when it came to the actual operational support, the advanced force operations, the military didn't rely on the CIA. They sent in two guys from Berlin, two special operators from a covert unit in Berlin who went under false passports because they were trained to do this. They did this kind of stuff. They went into Iran. They met with resources that they had identified. They rented a warehouse. They rented trucks. They did the whole thing. They had a network of Iranian agents working for them. This was the military that did this. We don't need the CIA. The CIA is not needed, not in the direct action paramilitary. We have Delta Force. We have SEAL Team 6. We should get rid of SEAL Team 6 because they're a bunch of murdering sex and manure. But Delta Force still has some honor. We have them. We don't need the Special Activities Division ground branch. We don't need them. We have guys that can do this. They can operate undercover, and they have discipline, and they have a chain of command, and they have honor. The CIA has no honor. They just lie. That's the problem. Mike Flynn ignored the fact that he knows that the CIA is a rogue agency. He's sitting there pretending that somehow, these guys, you know, should be brought under control. The president gave them an order to attack Russian airfields. That president's name was Joe Biden. The new president never turned that order off. And now we're surprised that the Ukrainians attacked Russian bombers at Russian airfields. No. If you want to stop, you got to order it to be stopped, and then you got to enforce that order.
Scott, it seems that the mainstream media is somehow changing the rhetoric when we look at Fox News, for example. The way that they're picturing the situation in Ukraine, it seems that they're getting to the same sort of strategy as the Biden administration was implementing in those days that they were running the show in Ukraine. Here is what General Jack Kane suggested on Fox News.
Part of the peace process exhibited by the United States to leverage someone to change their behavior. We've got to do the same thing with Russia. It is part of the process. It's not outside the process. And that means we got to leverage him. And we don't know if that will actually work. Let's be honest about it.
Yeah.
But we do know what is not working. And just the diplomatic talking is not working. So the leverage has got to be, I think, number one, military assistance, and give them the robust air defense systems and the other things they desperately need. Let's leverage Putin just as we did Zelensky. We don't know, let's be frank, if it's going to work, but it certainly is worth a try at this point,
yeah,
because diplomatic talks are not getting us there.
Yeah, we don't know if that's going to work.
We know it's not going to work. We know it's not. Let's talk what he said. Air defense, robust air defense. Hey, Jack, we did that. You don't think that we flooded Ukraine with all the Patriot missiles, all the French missiles, the Mamba and, you know, Crotal, and the Italians sent theirs in, the NASAMS from Norway, and we gave them everything, a multi-layered defensive. It was pretty damn good. It's pretty good. There's a reason why Russia has trouble hitting a lot of these targets. There's a reason why you can move equipment into Ukraine and it makes it to the front lines, because everybody's like, why doesn't Russia interdict it? Well, guys, because it's under one of the biggest air defense umbrellas ever put together in modern history. But the Russians, it's one of the great sort of, you know, we focus on the battlefield. You know, everybody's heard about Bakhmut, the meat grinder at Bakhmut. Everybody's heard about Mariupol, the bloody battle for Azovstal and all that. We've heard about the summer counteroffensive that failed at Robotino. We've heard about all the battles of, you know, fighting in Kursk. We've heard about all the ground battles that are going on. But perhaps the most impressive campaign that's been run by the Russians is the suppression of Ukraine's air defense network, which began in the fall of 2022 and then just continued. And it was designed to exhaust the system and break it apart, to identify weaknesses, exploit those weaknesses, but most importantly, to exhaust it. There are no more Patriot missiles to send into Ukraine. We can't produce them anymore. We can't produce them in the numbers that are needed. We've given them all away. We're desperate, trying to get Greece to give them to them. We're running around, you know, Israel, you've got a whole bunch of Patriots sitting in a warehouse that have been sitting in a warehouse since 1991. And we know they aren't going to work. Let's give them to the Ukrainians just so we can say, here, you have Patriot missiles. They're not going to work. Oh, we're going to upgrade them, upgrade the radars. They're not going to work because the Russians have broken the code. And the Russians have disassembled this. Today, Ukraine virtually has no air defense. And now the Russians, I mean, you know, one of the attacks on Kiev, which used to be one of the most heavily protected points, had the new version of the Geron drones just circling. Find a target and hit it. Boom. Circling. Find a target, hit it. Because Ukraine's had no more air defense. And Key now, we're going to give them robust air. How? I mean, think about it. The Ukrainians used to have a Soviet-provided air defense network with S-300s, S-200s, all this stuff. Not the best in the world, but there had to be respected. Under that umbrella, they came in and they built the new Patriot systems with the Crotals and the Mambas and all this other stuff integrated into the old Soviet system. And then as the Soviet system fell away because they ran out of missiles and they got destroyed, this one was reinforced. So you had a shell that you built a shell inside of it. And then when the outer shell went away, that shell was still there. Today, there's no shell. So let's say King was magically able to go out and find resources that don't exist. How do you get them into Ukraine now, King? you moron. What shell is there that allows you to slip it in? Because every time you bring in a Patriot system and set it up, it's going to get hit and destroyed by the Russians. So you're not going to reconstitute this air defense shell. And since you can't reconstitute the air defense shell, now the Russians start picking apart your whole logistics things. They start hitting your warehouses. They get your warehouses at the border with Poland. They get your intermediate warehouses in Dnipropetrovsk. They get to your advanced warehouses that are forward deployed in the fighting areas. And, you know, so now, Keen, you want to pour in other equipment? Well, let's say you send in 100 units of X. By the time it gets to the front line, you only got about 15 units left. And that ain't enough. And then the other thing is, I'd like to ask Mr. Keene, what's he going to do about artillery? You know, because we've now for the last 3 years been talking about how we're going to transform the Western defense industry, the best in the world. We are the arsenal democracy. My God, we can produce things better than anybody, especially those damn Russians. They can't produce anything. Well, how come Mark Rutte, the Secretary General, just the other day said, sir, the Russians got their defense industry up and running, and they're producing four times the amount of artillery shells than all of NATO combined. When I say all of NATO, that includes the United States. All of NATO is being outproduced by Russia 4-1 in artillery shells. Tanks. Nobody's producing any tanks in the West. The French got their Leclerc rolling out, you know, a couple here, a couple there. The Germans, you know, I don't think they're producing Leopards anymore because they can't produce steel because the price of gas is outrageous and their furnaces don't work. The British, you know, punching out one or two Challenger 3s, you know. Russians, man, they're just pumping out the modified version of the T-72, the T-80, the T-90, the Armada. They got them. They're coming out. They're just there. In 2023, when I went to the Victory Day parade in Moscow, it was equipment starved. Because, you know, Russia had to wake up to the fact that, you know, they had entered a high-intensity conflict phase, and it was burning through equipment, and they were struggling to meet the requirements of modern war. They're not struggling to do anything today. They are cranking out equipment. They had sufficient to spare, so they could just run tanks through the streets and say, look what we got. All of their units are up to speed. They got all the equipment they need. They're building new units. Remember, the Russian army went from 900,000 to 1.5 million. That's 600,000 increase. While Europe's sitting there talking about 300,000, you know, we're going to, you know, build 400,000. Russia already did it. 600,000, boom, new units, trained, equipped, new tanks, new air defense, everything, while they're fighting a high-intensity conflict in Ukraine. So it's not just that Russia is resupplying the units and building new units to go down. Their two armies are about to be introduced into the fighting. They've also put a new military district in outside of St. Petersburg, 70,000 strong. They're putting more units up in the Kola Peninsula. They're doing things in the Pacific and the Arctic. They're reinforcing everything. 600,000 new troops, trained, equipped. And when I say new troops, understand this. You just don't get 70,000 troops, give them uniforms, and give them equipment. They have to be prepared to execute a military, you know, plan. Let's say the St. Petersburg people have to be prepared to, say, I don't know, invade Finland and take Helsinki. That means that in addition to the tanks you have to have tanks identified to replace those tanks. And those tanks have to be in stockpiles. You have to have ammunition sufficient to take on a NATO country, anticipate reinforcement, fight a major battle. All of that has to be pre-planned and stored, in which the Russians are doing. They've made some mistakes. We've noticed the Ukrainians have gotten drones into some of these big ammunition supply things, and they go boom in a big way. Why? Because there's a hell lot of ammunition there. Why? Because Russia's preparing for the big one. The Russians are prepared for the big one. Poland... All talk, no action. Poland, oh my God, if we go to war with Russia, we'll be out of artillery shells in 4 days. Well, why aren't you preparing for the big one? Because NATO can't afford it. None of the NATO nations can fight a sustained action. Great Britain, we run out of everything in 14 days, 2 weeks, everything, we're done. Meanwhile, Russia is not only fighting this high intensity conflict and not running out of anything, but they have built 600,000 more men and they've prepared them to engage in high intensity conflict and never run out of anything. So what does Keane think he's going to do here? He really thinks he's going to get into a, you know, because what he's talking about is a war of attrition with the Russians, who invented the concept of a war of attrition. And they invented it in a way that isn't just about, this isn't Grant versus Lee. Normally you think of a war of attrition, you know, that's one of the analogies that's been put up there. You know, Grant versus Lee, where, you know, Grant comes into the wilderness and just puts his troops into the wilderness and they grind down the Union forces. But the problem is that the Union can replace all of their losses and the Confederates can't. So when the Union emerges from the wilderness, it's stronger. Despite losing massive casualties, the Confederates are weaker because they can't replace it. But even though they're the better soldiers, then they go to St. Petersburg and you have Cold Harbor and more Union troops dying in a big ditch. But now the Confederates run out of troops and it's over. See, that scenario has the Russians losing men in massive human assaults. The kill ratio right now on the front line is 20 to 1 in favor of Russia on some days, 20 to 1. It ain't the Russians that are losing people. The Russians are able to replace all of their casualties and have excess. 175,000 Russians were brought into the military from the beginning of the year until today. They're going to equip two armies. That's 140,000, which means that there's about 35,000 combat replacements. That's not dead. That's people who are going to get mobilized out. There's people who are wounded and the dead. 35,000 between January and now. Russia's, so if they've lost 35,000 in, you know, what are we now, 5 months, but they're bringing in 30 to 40,000 a month. It's over. It's over. Keane doesn't understand what he's talking about. He lives in a fantasy world. Now, hopefully there's people in Washington, D.C. who have stopped, because what happened for a while is that DIA and others were told that your analysis must conform with the data given to you by the Ukrainians, that it's not the policy of the United States to contradict Ukraine on issues of Russian casualties, performance of Ukrainian troops, and all that kind of stuff. So we were prohibited from doing independent assessments. Hopefully Tulsi's knocked that crap out, and now we have people who are able to give the straight, honest to God's truth about the deteriorating condition of the Ukrainian forces, the reality of NATO's inability to mobilize forces, sustain forces, and the absolute supremacy of the Russians when it comes to, building up force, projecting force, reinforcing force, defense industry, the whole works. Keane is high. It's just stupid. The good news is the Russians don't care what Jack Keane thinks. That's the good news. The other good news is the Russians don't care what Donald Trump does. They prefer to have a peaceful set, but they're not going to get it. I just interviewed a guy who used to be the advisor to Ukrainian presidents from Kuchma to Viktor Yanukovych and advises the Russian government today. And he said something that was very glim because I talked to him about the prospect of peace. I said, is there a chance? He said, no. He said, Ukraine is a nation on fire. And right now, because remember, there are two big policy objectives at the core of the Russian demands. We have to solve the root causes of the conflict. And the root cause is NATO expansion. The root cause is the militarization of Ukraine. And the root cause is the Nazification of Ukraine. These are real problems. Right now, there's just no commonality between the Ukrainian position and Russian position on any of these issues. And yet Russia's not going to yield, which means there never will be a deal. He said, Ukraine is on fire. And basically, the Russians have decided that the best way to fight this fire is to let it burn out. Russia's not going to make any effort to put the fire out. It's going to let it burn out. And then you solve these problems themselves. How do you demilitarize Ukraine? Kill everybody. How do you denazify Ukraine? Kill everybody. How do you ensure Ukraine is not part of NATO? Destroy Ukraine. And that's the fate of Ukraine. And there's not a damn thing Jack Keane or, Keith Kellogg or any of these other people can do to stop it. Russia's on an inevitable path towards victory. It'll take as long as it takes. Some people believe that the Ukrainians are going to burn out by the end of the, by the end of the summer, by at least by the end of this year. But Russia said, we can go as long as you want. Russia's put no, that's the amazing thing about it. Vladimir Putin's put no calendar date on this. 21 years to defeat the Swedes. We can do it. We'll do it. Russia will never quit until the victory is theirs. You know, Trump, you know, has another, what, 3.5 years in office, then he's gone. In Europe, we see politicians collapsing left and right. Nobody's going to outlast the Russians. Nobody.